This week's Parsha Shmos. We begin a whole new Seder. I want your full attention, boys. A whole new Sefer in Chumash, and I want to discuss. In the very beginning, we have a number of events that take place that seem to be events that, if you and I were there, we probably would not have done. I'll start with the very first one. We wouldn't have done it, by the way, because we think it's like really the lost cause. First of all, right away, we have the story of the Mialdos. Mialdos are the, we say Shifra and Pua, which we say Yocheved and Miriam. But we have these two women who are fighting a losing battle. There's been a commandment that everyone in every person who's helping the Jewish women give birth should kill the child on the way out of the womb. Should kill the child. We'll see very soon who it was, boys or girls, but should kill the children on the way out. Now, even if two of these wet nurses, or two of these delivery, labor coaches, would not carry out their wishes, you'd imagine, it's only a matter of time until they take the babies and kill them also. That's what happened later on. They started killing people when they were born, and they killed the women in the Nile afterwards. There's not much of a hope over here. Why risk their lives? Why risk their lives for the chance to give some children a few hours of life? And even then, again, before they get fired for their jobs, other people are doing their jobs properly, they kill the babies. What's the point of the Mialdos doing what they're doing? It seems like it's a lost cause. Miriam, she goes, once her, everyone, the Jews realized that there was no chance that we were surviving, and every child that was born was thrown, or at least the boys, were thrown into Nile. So it says that Amram divorced Yocheved, which are Miriam's parents. They divorced each other, because they figured, I'm not going to give birth to a child, and they're going to get killed in the end. It's just, I can't do it. And then everyone else got divorced also. And it makes sense, we don't understand. Imagine someone, God forbid, had a genetic disorder with a husband and them, had the same disorder, that she and he. And in the end, every child they give birth to is going to die within a month. You'd imagine they stop having children.
Would they get divorced though?
They probably should, or they have other ways. Nowadays, you can probably do other ways. But it doesn't. At least you wouldn't have children for it. You wouldn't have children.
No, you can't have children.
Right. You're right. It could be that you would say married, but you wouldn't have children at least.
Saying it's different because you can't adopt.
So right. So Amram and Yocheved, they stayed separate. There's no birth control back then. So what are you going to do? You're going to sleep with your wife, and then you're going to have a child, and then you're going to kill the child in the end. But you're right, you can just be celibate if you want it to be. But Miriam says, you're worse than they are, Dad. They're going to kill only the boys, and you're not letting even girls be born. Again, for what? Like, what reason is she doing this? So that they can have a whole generation of girls that the Mitzrayim will take anyways for their spouses? Like, what's her mindset? What's the goal? What are they going to get out of it in the end? Bas Paro. She's sitting bathing by the Nile. And she sees a table floating in the Nile. She's a little basket, and she hears a cry. She reaches out her hand to grab the baby. But the baby wasn't really so close to her. It was very far away. She stretched out her arms. Like, imagine again, someone at the door, and I'm not going to say, here, run, I'll get the door. I wouldn't do that. It makes no sense at all. Why would she even stretch her hand out? Like, it doesn't make any sense at all. There's no purpose to it. It's a complete joke. She wasn't like Inspector Gadget. She had no clue her arm would stretch. She never done that before. It's the first time, first trick to ever do that way. What's she doing it for? And finally, the last thing is Moshe Rabbeinu. First journey out of the palace. He sees an Egyptian hitting a Jew. I imagine it's from Meisim B'chol Yom. They have it all the time. They were the taskmasters. We were the slaves. He's like, no, not on my watch. And he kills the guy. He kills the Mitzri. Why? Starting a revolution? That's what he knew. He ran away. It wasn't like he was trying to change the culture. What was the point of him killing that Mitzri? What did it do? So one less Mitzri? So then run away and never be seen again for 65 years? What was the purpose of what he did? What did it do? Four events that we have, each one in a vacuum seems to be, if I was there, if you were there, would we have done those things? Would we have protected a few children, risking our lives, knowing that anyway they'd probably be killed later on? Would we have convinced our parents, just, get back together, stay together, be married, have children that half of them will be killed afterwards? Would we have reached out for a child that was yards away from where we were standing? Would we have put our lives in danger and risked our future to kill one person out of tens or hundreds of thousands that are taskmasters for one person? We've done that. So I'm not sure if I was on any of those things. But they all happened in the story of Shmos. Beginning of Shmos, Parsha Shmos, Sefer Shmos. What exactly happened? Why did it happen that way? So I want to start with Moshe Rabbeinu. This is an unbelievable Ramban al Torah. Unbelievable. If you take a second, you think about it, it's like, it's a game changer. If you let it. It's a game changer. What does Ramban say? Says Ramban. I'll read it to you inside. Perek Beis, Pasuk Yud Aleph, Pasuk Yud Beis. Vayigdal Moshe vayitzei elecha. Moshe grew up. He went out to see his brethren. Up until now, he'd been a prince. He was the prince of Egypt. He was growing up in the palace. He was the son, adopted son of the princess. He'd be the next leader, potentially. And it says, why did he go out? Vayitzei elecha? Says the Ramban, ki gidu lo asher hu Yehudi. They just told him that morning, hey, you're not my real son. You're actually Jewish. You think you take some time to like let that settle a little bit. Like, don't act on it right away. What does that mean for me? How am I going to function right now? It deserves attention, not rash reaction. You would think, you'd imagine. But he says, one second, I'm a Jew. Hayachav faith lo sam. I need to see what does it mean to be a Jew. I want to see what it means. He went outside. Bavor Shehem Achiv. It's my new brother. This is my current brother. He saw right away the suffering they were under. The terrible torture they were being put through. He could not tolerate it. And he killed the Mitzri. Imagine a scene where his life, he was being educated by the finest educators. He had everything he could ever want in the world. And all of a sudden, his life comes crashing down. You are not who you think you are.
How old was he?
13, maybe. He was young. He just found out. He was. It's a Vayigdal. He came of age. 15. I don't know the number, but it's probably a teen. Somewhere in his teens. He was young. And yet, what happens? He finds out that my life as I knew it is not what I thought it was. He can still live in the palace. No one's kicking him out. He can just choose to forget the information he heard about. Or know about it, but keep it quiet. How many people in the Holocaust knew they were Jews, but they kept it quiet to survive? They were given opportunities. He could either choose to be part of a slave nation or grow up in the palace. It would mean a 180-degree life change. But he said, it's not who I am. It's not true. It would be not true for me to live life I thought I was right now. I'm leaving it. Despite everything that would happen afterwards, I'm leaving it behind. There are many people in the world, us included, who live a certain life. A life of a certain culture we grew up in. We're very happy to live that life. We're very happy to do it. But then, you might have an awakening. You know what? There's more to life than I thought there was. Maybe me focusing on my education is not the most important thing right now for me to do. Maybe me to focus on this relationship I have right now with that person is not the most important thing for me to do. I have much more important things in my life that I'm kind of giving up by doing those things. I'm not ready for that. I owe it to myself to become the real, true me that I was born to become. And more than anything you can imagine, it's not like giving up your college choice. It's not like staying an extra year in Israel. It means every single thing he knew to be true, he left behind. Everything. Because he could not be fake. That's not who I am. Some people like that. That's some other people like that. But that's not who I am. These are my brothers. This is where I belong. This is where I belong. I can't tell you how many people, and you know them yourself, if it's not you yourself, who have a game plan in life. This college, this career, this opportunity, this girl, whatever it is, you have your vision picked out for you already. But that might be the best version of yourself. That's someone else's dream. That's not your dream. That's not what you were born into their faith to do. So you have two choices. Ignore it and be like, hey, listen, I know, I hear it, it's not for me. Or, say, God, Baruch, listen, how could I possibly live a fake life? That's not who I am. This is not who I am. I cannot go on with my plans right now. I must do something differently. I owe it to my creator, to my parents, to my people. Moshe Rabbeinu started that process for us. And at the first day he heard about it, he's like, I'm an Ish Emes. I will not stand and watch this happen. Unbelievable. What difference can they make in the end, though? What difference can they make? Each one of those people. So we first thought, if you look about it, each one of them, they made the biggest difference in the world. Every one of them, who you would think to yourself, it wouldn't matter what they did, it mattered, it was everything. The Mialdo saved the women, saved lives, saved boys and girls both, saved many, many lives. They were the future Jewish people. Imagine if no one had done that, then there would be a big gap in the Jewish children, and who knows? Shifra and Pua, if they hadn't put this out there, what difference did they make? They saved. They stopped with the whole kill the children thing. They stopped with it. They started throwing boys in the Nile, but they didn't have any more of the maidservants, the wet nurses doing it. They would deliver the babies, just throw the boys out and keep the girls. They saved an entire people. Miriam telling her father and mother, get back together again. They had Moshe Rabbeinu. The biggest difference, the difference maker. Bas Paro stretched her hand out and it actually reached. Brought the child to her. It worked. And Moshe Rabbeinu gave up his life of being a prince of Egypt to become Rabbeinu, the leader of the chosen people. So though each one of them, in theory, would have passed on that opportunity, they made a world of difference. The question is, how do they make a difference? How do they do it? What was their secret of success? This is Parshas Shmos, Sefer Shmos. You know what Shmos means? It means your name. These are the names. Why are we calling something names? Like, okay, that's how it starts. Eilah Shmos B'nei Yisrael. So you want to call the Parshas Shmos? Okay, it's true. That's why. It's one reason why it is. Bas Paro's hand stretched out. She reached out for things far away, and it actually got there. We'll get to that in a minute. Shmos, the name, the shame. The word shame has also two other ways you could read the word shame, like shum, there, and some put. It's my own idea, but I think it makes a lot of sense. What makes you who you are, your real name, is when you put yourself where you are. What does that mean? We work so hard for future things, future this, future that, and we let the present sometimes slip through our fingers. We're busy preparing for some event later on, and we miss what's in front of us right away. People all the time, you have a father home from work talking about a deal he's about to make right, you know, in a few months from now, and his kid wants to play with him right now, and he has no time for his kid right now. How do you become shame, the name you're supposed to become in the end? When you're some, when you put yourself shum where you are, when you focus on the moment. I do not know where this will lead. I do not know what's going to happen. But right now, at this moment in time, this is what I have to do. Stop, you're not a Navi, you're not a Ben Navi, we don't know what's going to happen later on, but right now, this is the moment. This is the only thing that matters right now. This is it. There was a... there's a story I heard one time, I told it over at my Shabbos table, recently. I think it was last Shabbos, a little over. There's a story I heard one time. Rav Moshe Weinberger was known as the, what's that? The Eish Kodesh. The Eish Kodesh, who now is in Eretz Yisrael, but he's really has the Eish Kodesh shul in Woodmere. So he's a very, very holy, holy person. Holy person, very, very deep. And one time he had a raffle in his shul. And the raffle was to see who could have a half hour or an hour of charusa with him, one-on-one time. And it's like a dream, an hour of Moshe Weinberger. It's a tremendous opportunity. He's called, why he was called the Mashpia. He's a person who gives influence. He's inspiring. An hour. And they did a whole raffle, and like a 10-year-old, an 8-year-old kid won. What do you want to play dreidel together? You know, we'll play a game, go fish? Like, what do you possibly do with an 8-year-old kid for an hour? So he started off and he said to the kid, the following question. And we heard the second name because the kid's brother, sister, my wife's student. She told the story to my wife. So it's legit. He starts off with the chavrus and said the following thing to the kid. He says, who's the most important person to ever live in the world? What is the most important place ever in the world? What's the most important time ever in the world? So the kid's like, gosh, like, you know, 8 years old. David HaMelech is a person. You know, Beis HaMikdash is the place, and Yom Kippur is the time. The rabbi's like, very nice answer. But wrong! Wrong! You are the person, this is the place, and now is the time. Nothing's more important than you, right here, right now. The kid is 8 years old, walked away like, he told the story over it. It clearly impacted him very much. Because usually it's someone else is really important, not me. And some other time will be important, not now. And it's not right over here. When you put your shum, when you're sum, when you place yourself shum there where you are right now, then you make for yourself a shame, a name. When you understand how you could become, then what you do is important. Bas Paro is sitting right now in the Nile River. According to Chazal, she was converting. She sees a baby far away. It is not a miracle that her hand stretched. At least not as much as the fact that she reached her hand out in the first place. God can do anything he wants to do. But we never reach for stars. We never reach for a basket because it's out of our reach. I'm going to let it go. I'm not even going to try for it. Bas Parah placed herself there and said, I will try as hard as I can. That shot is found in Reb Chaim Shlomo Siegel's Musar. Yichad Lev, she put everything she had and she reached as far as she could and she reached well beyond her imagination. It was an impossibility to grab that as far as any of us are concerned. But she still tried. Then we don't have to give up. We give up learning. You know why we can't learn? I don't know how to learn. I'm not trying. I don't know how to do it. We give up. And all you do when you give up is you guarantee that you're right. You're a prophet. You will never learn because you gave up on it. But if you tried your hardest, if Bas Parah's arm can stretch beyond possibility, then so can you. So can you. But we just don't care enough to stretch. We don't care. You know why? I don't have to be ashamed. I don't have to be a name. You know, I don't know if you guys heard of Yudin. I just heard of him. I didn't see yet. But Yudin has an article written in Mishpacha magazine this week. An article about him. Because something happened in his life that was unique and it was important. He didn't speak for a week. He wrote about what it means to be silent for a week. He wrote a whole thing about it. Apparently, I didn't see it yet, but it's Mishpacha magazine. You buy it yourself or ask your parents to buy it and put it on your fridge later on. Hang it in your room. It's there. You can have two ways you experience the thing. You either experience something and you try to learn from it and inspired by it and do everything that you can, or you just point, hey, that's pretty cool. Cool thing, not for me, for him, not for me, that I can promise you, you will never be ashamed. I don't mean ashamed. You won't be your name. Your parents named you for what you could become one day if you try your hardest. I'll tell you just a shot to bring this point home, and then one last story, and then we'll stop. The famous Emes Yaakov, Yaakov Amnesky points this out. Unbelievable idea, life-changing, for sure. Even if you don't let it, it's life-changing. There's no choice. Pesach Halacha is, I'm sure you all know, when Moshe Rabbeinu was born, he would not suckle from a non-Jew. They couldn't find a wet nurse to give him milk, and they had to find, and they asked Miriam, and Miriam gave her the mother, Yocheved, and she obviously could, she had milk because she had the baby. It was her baby. She'd been nursing the last few months, so she continued nursing the baby. That's how the story goes. Why wouldn't he drink from a non-Jew? So the Chazal say, the mouth that will one day speak to the Shekhinah will not, never suckle from a non-Jew. Fine. Psak halacha, brought down, halacha lemasa. Psak halacha. The Shulchan Aruch is that you should not give your child to suckle from a non-Jew. To nurse from a non-Jew. The Vilna Gaon says, what's the source for that? Our Parsha, Moshe Rabbeinu. Excuse me, says the Emes Yaakov, Rav Kamenetsky. Moshe Rabbeinu, the reason why he couldn't do it is written in the Chumash. It's written in the Midrashim. Because one day he would speak, Pel, Pel, Ashkina. Ma Kesher Eli, what do you do with me at all? I'm not speaking to Ashkina. I'm not going to be. Why can't I, if I need to? God forbid, if someone, the mother can't nurse, so you get a wet nurse who's not Jewish. What's the problem? Says Emes Yaakov, why can't you speak to the Shekhinah? Why can't you? Because you think you can't? That's not true. Moshe Rabbeinu thought he'd speak to Shekhinah one day. He never thought he'd speak to Shekhinah one day. He could, because he became who he was. Because every moment of his life, he took seriously and worked at it. If you educate, says Yaakov, if you educate your children that they can be the next speaker to the Shekhinah, then maybe they will. But for none of us, either we don't care to be, or don't think we can be. With one last story, it's one of my favorite stories I tell over. And it's about someone who just grasped for straws. They grasped for a straw, and a Kadosh Baruch Hu gave them gold. Story goes that, as we all know, Reb Chaim Kanievsky is you know, is the Gadol Hador, maybe among them for sure. His wife also was a Gadol Hador, Rebbetzin Kanievsky, famous woman. People go, she's passed away a few years ago. People go to her bracha. She's a very famous woman. There's a story they tell over in her book and in the biography about her life that impacted me a tremendous amount. And I'll share with you. And as hopefully this will be an opportunity to realize and understand that you never understand, you never know just what could happen if you try your hardest. There was a woman, more of a secular woman, who had a daughter who fell in love with an Arab man. And, you know, she knew the one thing her parents didn't want was her to marry out of the faith. But she was smitten. And she wanted to marry this guy. And the mom, the parents protested and protested, and the girl, she said, listen, I appreciate it. I love you very much, mom and dad, but I this is the love of my life. I'm not giving it up. So she said, would you come with me to Rebbetzin Kanievsky? Speak to her. Maybe she can knock some sense into your mind. She says, out of kibbutz avim, I'll go with you, but I just don't think it's going to matter. To take her Rebbetzin Kanievsky, talking to her about it, the importance of staying Jewish, the importance of being with, bringing up the faith, important of this, important of that. After 2 hours of speaking, the girl says to Rebbetzin Kanievsky, I can't thank you enough, but mine's not changed. I'm not moved by what you said. I'm moved, but I'm not moved enough to change my life around for it. But you gave me so much time, I'll do one thing. You pick any mitzvah you want me to keep, short of not marrying my husband, and I'll do it. You decide. Now, could you imagine being on the spot like that? What mitzvah could you possibly, what are you going to choose? Want to light candles on Shabbos? Like, what was he going to bring? You know, and she had to think something that's maybe bring her back at some point. Like, what are you going to choose? And Rabbi Zinkowski thinks, and she says, okay, I want you to say two prakim of tefillin every single day. She says, you got it, deal. She's walking out the door. She says, well, no, one second, don't leave yet. I want to give you my tefillin. She runs to wherever the room was, and she grabs her tear-soaked tefillin. She hands it to the girl. The girl's name is Riva. That's the girl's name. She hands it to Riva, this girl. She says, here, take my siddur, take my tefillin, and think of me when you daven. She's like, and I will, and thank you so much. She gave her a big hug, and it really appreciates me so much to me. Walking out the door, she says, wait a second, one last thing. Let's say the first one together. Let's say the first parak tefillin together, you and I. Says, you know what, Rebbetzin, that would be an honor to say it with you, the first parak tefillin together with you. So he opens up the tefillin, tefillin mem gimel. And this is how it starts. Shafteini Elokim v'riva rivi. This is her name. She pauses. Which means, and the next line says, migoy lo chasid. From someone foreign will not be pious. Me'ish mirmav avla sifalteni. From man of deceit and sin, run. First pasuk, til mem gimel. The girl closes the hillum, and she starts to cry. She says, I won't marry that man. You think in a million years, Rebbetzin actually thought, you know, this wasn't like a planted tehillim, mem gimel aleph, look at the, it wasn't like that. This was her trying her hardest. What can I possibly do to help this girl out? She had no clue she'd hit mem gimel aleph or think her name is Riva. This must be talking. She had no clue. But she did everything that she could. She placed herself in the moment to create a shame, a hope that one day this person will become something great. And it changed the life around. It was a regular person trying their hardest. And it created gold. You know, we live in a world when a lot's going on around us. And it's all future-based. Everything's about the future, future, future. If you always look at the future, you will never become anything. You'll just become someone who says about future things. It all starts now. If you're not taking care of yourself, where you are right now, then you will never be an important name in anyone's world. It's all about the guts and the sweat that you put in now. Whatever life plans that you have, you know what? Maybe it's kedai to rethink sometimes. After all, Moshe Rabbeinu became Rabbeinu because he rethought his life plans. I can promise you they were much better than your life plans are. Gold and silver of the Egyptian palace, the next one in line for the kingdom. And I can promise you, what he gave up for that, what he gave up to go to, was a 180. You can't imagine what it's like. Be part of a suppressed and slave nation. Because you know why? Because that's MS. Because that's who he was. That's who I am. Not that I'm this. You go through your own struggles in life, you're something. You were born into something. You were given a name, a Jewish name. You are a Jew first and foremost. Place yourself where you are right now, and become a great name. Have a great Shabbos. Wow.